O my dear one, the most powerful sage Kashyapa, being extremely pleased by the mild behavior of his wife Diti, smiled and spoke to her as follows. Shri Kashyapu Vacha Param Varaya Vamaru Pritasteham Manindite Striya Bhartatari Surprite Kakama Iha Chagama. Kashyapa Muni said, O beautiful woman, O irreproachable lady, since I'm very much pleased by your behavior, you may ask me for any benediction you want. If a husband is pleased, what desires are difficult for his wife to obtain, either in this world or in the next? Text 33 and 34. Patirevahinarinam Daivatam Paramam Sritam Manasa Sarva Bhutanam Vasudeva Sriyapati Patireva Hinarinam Daivatam Paramam Smitam Manasa Sarva Bhutanam Vasudeva Sriyapati. And then text 34. Saeva devata linger namarupa vikalpitai ijate bhagavan pumbi stribis chapati rupadrik. Pati. Pati.
Pati.
No, not with an R. It is, yeah, it's an H. The husband. Eva. Indeed. He, certainly, narinam, of women, devatam, demigod, paramam, supreme, smritam, is considered, manasaha, situated in the heart, sarvabhutanam, of all living entities, Vasudeva, Vasudev, Sriya, of the goddess of fortune, Pati, the husband, Saha, he, Eva, certainly, Devatalingai, by the forms of the demigods, Nama, name. Rupa, forms, vikalpitai, conceived, ijate, is worshipped, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Pumbi, by men, Stribi, by women, Cha, also, Patirupadrik, in the form of the husband. Translation. A husband is the supreme demigod for a woman, the supreme personality of Godhead. Lord Vasudev, the husband of the goddess of fortune, is situated in everyone's heart and is worshipped through the various names and forms of the demigods by fruitive workers. Similarly, a husband represents the Lord as the object of worship for a woman. Purport. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:23, Yepi anya devata bhakta jajanti shradiyan vitaha tepimam evakonteya jajantya vidipurvakam. Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but it is offered without true understanding. The demigods are various assistants who act like the hands and legs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is not in direct touch with the Supreme Lord and cannot conceive of the exalted position of the Lord is sometimes advised to worship the demigods as various parts of the Lord. If women, who are usually very much attached to the husband, worship their husbands as representative of Vasudev, the women benefit, just as Ajamil benefited by calling for Narayan, his son. Ajamil was concerned with his son But because of his attachment to the name of Narayan, he attained salvation simply by chanting that name. In India, a husband is still called Pati Guru, the husband's spiritual master. If husband and wife are attached to one another for advancement in Krishna consciousness, their relationship of cooperation is very effective for such advancement. Although the names of Indra and Agni are sometimes uttered in the Vedic mantras, Indriya Swaha, Agnaye Swaha, the Vedic sacrifices are actually performed for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. As long as one is very much attached to material sense gratification, the worship of the demigods or the worship of one's husband is recommended. Then says, as long as one is very much attached to material sense gratification, the worship of the demigods or the worship of one's husband is recommended. It's like the small letters in the contract, that last line. So this situation of worshipping the husband is a Vedic injunction, and in this day and age, it certainly cannot just be written off as irrelevant. But on the other hand, the relevance of it really depends on the individual positions of husband and wife. When the husband is truly properly situated and fixed in spiritual practices, then this will apply more than when the husband is spiritually quite weak, and in some occasions it's really the lady that is the spiritual engine in the family and that really drives the spirituality, and then it becomes a little bit awkward if we are seeing this Vedic etiquette so strictly enforced. Therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami has said, Vaidiki lokiki yat kriyate mune hari sevana kulaiva. Whatever gives the kriya, whether it is Vedic or whether it is practical, mundane kind of principles, whatever is hari seva anakul, whatever gives the benefit for the service of the Lord. The Dharma Shastra, of course, goes into this kind of injunction in a much more elaborate way than the Srimad Bhagavatam does. We're seeing that here Kashyapa is certainly speaking principles of Dharma when he's pointing out that the husband represents the Lord as the object of worship for a woman. At the same moment, while Kashyapa is speaking these verses, he's deviating from Dharma. Right? That's also to be noted, you know what I'm saying? We cannot just look at the text alone. We have to look at the thread of the chapter, and it is basically that Diti and Kashyapa are about to engage in sexual activities at an inappropriate time, which is a deviation from Dharma. So, although Kashyapa is speaking words of Dharma, he's using the words of Dharma to kind of justify his adharmic activities. So the very proponent of the principle is himself not qualified for the worship by looking at this verse. See? So that's interesting. Because that's Kashyapa, what to speak of us? Right? What to speak of us? So therefore we have to really see if this appropriate, if this applies, and when it is just demanded, you know, you have to worship me as God, right? Then it may not be a proper relationship. In this day and age, oftentimes partnership works better. However, when the women have to overly compete with men, then it is an artificial situation. Of course, our modern society creates that artificial situation, but with it, the ladies are losing somewhat of the soft female nature and are developing more the competitive male nature, which, of course, in our modern society, everyone is educated up to PhD level, male or female, and therefore it doesn't necessarily apply. And it's also not that we are going to say that those ladies who are PhDs have become unnecessarily PhDs. Rather, all that can be engaged in the service of the Lord. So when we are very transcendentally engaged, we can engage all our assets in the service of the Lord, and that is the essence. So PhDs are welcome from all sides to use their expertise in the Supreme Lord. Still, we cannot just ignore the Bhagavatam's descriptions on male and female natures. And therefore, we may see that traditional roles, traditional descriptions of conditioned nature have their significance. And also, still now, if we look at the Bhagavad Gita, Vyasyatmika, Buddhire, no, that's the wrong verse, sorry. Now I got the wrong verse. Can't get the right one until later. So, whatever may be, we are seeing in Bhagavad Gita also where women are described to be less intelligent. Now, the best way to understand that means that, first of all, what is the definition of intelligence? The definition of intelligence means to act according to principles that are of behavior that are revealed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the source of all knowledge. So intelligence basically means that we have access to that knowledge and know how to apply that knowledge. Without application of knowledge, there is no intelligence. Okay? Not maybe by modern definition, yes, but not by the Vedic definition. And that is sometimes a difference we see. By modern definition, it's about putting the round pegs in the round holes and the square pegs in the square holes and things like that. And accordingly, or if you can figure out Sudoku puzzles and things like that, then intelligence is detected. But in the Vedic context, intelligence always means ultimately intelligent, which means that one is pursuing the ultimate goal of life in his understanding and in his actions. And that is, of course, a distinction from modern intelligence. So whenever we look at Bhagavatam or at scriptures in terms of intelligence, we always see intelligence in that context, in the context of pursuing the ultimate goal of life. Yes, so protection is recommended for ladies in the Vedic culture. I remember that in two ashrams back, I sometimes had a few disagreements, and one of the disagreements was, you know, that my former wife would sometimes get into it. I don't mean to disclose things, and you know, in a negative way, but she sometimes would get in an argument with someone that happens in life, and then she would say, "You have to protect me," which means you have to support me. And I would say, "Yes, I have to protect you from yourself." and then we had a major argument. what to say. There are now that's not meaning to be putting anyone down. Just to say that, but that's just how it works in the world. Right? It's not so easy to have these kind of Vedic roles. We are coming from a very different culture. And the Vedic model doesn't fully fit us. And also, in a transcendental context, it's not fully required. In the transcendental context, it is really anukulyena sankalpa. It is whatever is favorable for the service of the Lord. When Srila Prabhupada came to the West and he said, oh, the ladies are very intelligent. They're very intelligent. They're very capable. They can do many things. So whoever can produce results, ultimately, is what is important. But the protection element is there. It is natural. When I met the German lady on the plane who was a single mother working a job and putting two children to school, etc., she said, maybe sometimes sometimes I'm thinking that the traditional model was actually nice. You know? Yes, having a husband who cares and so that the ladies can take care of the children instead of putting the kids in the daycare and working around the clock, you know, to pay for everything, pay for the nanny, basically. It's a very topsy-turvy society. So when we are looking at these kind of models of male-female relationships of the Bhagavatam, then we can see that in the context of Rupa Goswami's writings. And we cannot just isolate a verse like this from the Bhagavatam, carve it on stone and hang it in the bedroom, you know, as like, these are the rules of the house. Because this is about the Grihastha Ashram, some memories come back of the Grihastha Ashram. And also notice that during arguments, people can quote a lot of slokas. During arguments, they can quote Shastra left and right, much more than usual. So, you know. But of course, Shastra is not basically a tool to win an argument. Shastra is offering us, besides pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord, a supportive material condition. And when the Bhagavatam is dealing with these ashram issues, and then it's about that, a supportive situation, but the essence is pure devotional service, and our interest is pure devotional service. And somehow or other, in whatever way, we can get the maximum result for Krishna service. That is what our desire is. And to be honest, that's also the topic that interests me a lot more. If I have to speak for 1 hour on this, like, male-female relationships, then begin to look at my watch after 15 minutes and start to think, what else am I going to say now on this topic, right? Without putting my foot in my mouth and, you know, and remaining balanced. And rather than putting my foot in my mouth, I'm thinking of Lord Chaitanya, who put his toe in his mouth, just remembering Krishna, who, as the baby, put his toe in his mouth. It's not easy to put your toe in your mouth when you are an adult, but Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could do so by being in that mood of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then next moment, shifting into the mood of a devotee and saying, Naham vipra nachanara patir napivaisya nasudra, Naham varni natsagriya patir yovanasta Gatirva. I have nothing to do with any of these positions in Varna Ashram. I am simply the servant of the servant of the servant, and so on. And this spirit is supersedes Kula Dharma. When we get instructions of Kula Dharma, these are secondary, or Kula Dharma means the instructions that govern family life. Such instructions are secondary to the instructions about pure devotional service as given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And especially our movement is very much dedicated to pure devotional service, and that is really our main objective. That's what we are striving for. And therefore, a happy ashram life is, in any ashram, is about how much one serves. If we make so much of the ashram, even the sannyas ashram, which is a nice ashram, but even the sannyas ashram, if one thinks too much, I'm a sannyasi, I'm a sannyasi, I'm a sannyasi, that will also not help, right? I am the servant. I'm simply the servant of the Supreme Lord and of the servant of the Supreme Lord. And that's all. And that is our main mood. And then all relationships with other devotees will also improve a lot, obviously. If we take that role of servant, then everybody will naturally be dedicated to others, and then it doesn't become so competitive that it's necessary to sort of ascertain who is really in charge. On Ram Nomi, I gave a lecture, and in the lecture I included a theme, and the theme of the worship of Lord Ramachandra, to begin with, and that the worship of Lord Ramachandra centers around Dharma. The entire Ramayana is basically aiming at following Dharma. And that Dharma is not easy to implement, as we see, like Lord Ramachandra gets caught in the most complicated situations due to just adhering to Dharma. Going to the forest, although it may not be beneficial for the kingdom. Bharat comes back and says, now our father has died. Now it doesn't make sense anymore, you know, to stay in the forest for all these years. The kingdom is suffering in your absence. Everyone wants you to return. I've brought all of Ayodhya here. We are all here. Why did Bharat go with his whole army to the forest? Right? Only for the purpose of convincing Ram. Right? He said, if I go alone, I may not convince him. But if he feels the force of all these people from Ayodhya, and he feels the force, right, like that everyone wants him, then maybe he'll do it. Right? Then maybe we can over. That was the only reason why they went with a huge army. Otherwise, he could have gone alone, right, with a few guards or whatever, you know, incognito. Not with a huge, huge army. Anyway, then, finally, in the Ramayana, it comes to the crunch where, you know, Ram has to make the choice between Sita and Dharma. And finally he abolishes Sita, which breaks his heart, but he is obliged to do so because he spent the night in the house of another man, and Dharma says that that's unacceptable. So, and people were demanding that he would follow that Dharma, so he did. He did, which is terrible. Right? This is the tragedy of the Ramayana. This is the heartbreaking part where Ram is sending Sita away. And then comes Krishna, right? The next level. And Krishna basically says at the end of the Gita, Sarva dharmam paricayamam ekam sarva. Give up all dharma. Just surrender unto me. Huh? That will do. You know, I mean, if you're trying to follow all that dharma, it will be too complicated. Surrender unto me. That is Krishna. If the baby is really going to be over interested, there is a room next door, and it's that the babies can sit there, and the mothers can hear, and I can still think instead of baby, 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 baby. And it's not that I don't like babies, but babies and Bhagavatam are tough. Because it takes, if I have half concentration, I don't go very deep. So anyway, where were we before the baby? But in one at a time. Okay, Krishna came. Krishna, the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharma Paricaya. Thank you, the Bhagavad Gita. Yes. So the Bhagavad Gita basically told us, give up all dharma and just surrender unto me, which is a different instruction than the example of Lord Ramachandra. It means that service to Krishna becomes everything. And we are more governed by that principle, the principle of trying to just dedicate everything in service to Krishna. Therefore, in our life, we are not putting so much emphasis, dharma, 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 dharma. We put the emphasis on devotional service, devotional service, devotional service. And then, yes, then, but what about that? We find that difficult also, to chant so much, 16 rounds, so much. To do so much service, that I even have to lift my finger and put it in the bead bag. Oh, my hand gets tired. It's just all so difficult, so austere, right? So even this surrender to Krishna, everything in service of Krishna, too difficult. So then the next level is, therefore, I know I am weak, I know I'm not following very nicely. I need mercy. So this is our case. Our case is I need mercy. Now, the qualification for that need in mercy is trinadapi sunichena, is humility, great humility. So it all starts to work at humility. So bringing it back for a moment to marriage, right, since we are starting with Kashyapa and Diti, marriage works also when there's humility. It's like, that's a big factor in making it work. Right? And tolerance also, the tree and all that. The Trinadapi Sunichana verse works very well. One of my comments is, marriages don't work, right? I'm sorry to say, marriages don't work. You have to work for it. Then it will work. It's not automatic. You know, it's not we have 90% compatibility, according to the astrologer. Anyway, that's fine for the astrologer. but still, you know, you have to work for it. That's the reality. But back to pure devotional service, because being married or not married is such a thing that it's of secondary importance. It's a secondary vow, because one can marry 16,108 times, theoretically, and still one doesn't go back to Godhead. One can marry in devotional service. That's not enough. It's about pure devotional service. That's the only means for returning back to Godhead. And that's the only aim in life. And that's all we really care about. And the rest, you know, the more we engage in devotional service, the more all the other issues will also stay behind us. Because when there are marriage issues, it really means we are not sufficiently absorbed in pure devotional service. That's what it means. Or when there are problems in the brahmachari ashram, same thing. We're not sufficiently engaged in devotional service or in any ashram. Because varna ashram, yes, it's we need to take a position in the material world somewhere. Right? Somewhere. We are in a material body. So we take a position in the material world and then within varna ashram for the sake of purification. But varna ashram in itself is not very important from the spiritual perspective. Rupa Goswami, throughout the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, makes it clear that varna ashram is of a secondary nature and that the essence is pure devotional service, and varna ashram helps us. It's when we are not able to be on that level of pure devotional service, then we get concerned with ashram codes. That's when we take shelter of them. When we are not able to operate on pure love for Krishna, where we fall short in love, then dharma. Then dharma is our next level. Because otherwise, after that comes adharma. And that, of course, is not an option. That is only entangling us in the cycle of birth and death. That will interfere with going back to Godhead. So dharma is our lowest level. That's where we sort of go down to the dharma level. Yes. But actually, our aim is not to be perfect in varna ashram. Our aim is to just do a lot of service. Therefore, what really counts, and a lot of service boils down to what are we doing in Srila Prabhupada's movement. Because Srila Prabhupada is really the acharya who has given us Krishna consciousness for this modern age. He's given us the mission. He has shaped everything. And therefore, it's then, the more we connect in service to Prabhupada, it's there where the mercy starts flowing. And that's what we see in devotees who are... In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you get this description of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is in Jagannath Puri, and there is a huge crowd. And then Nityananda and Kashishwar, they join hands and sort of to protect the Lord, right? Make a circle around him. And then others make a second ring, other devotees, and then the king, Maharaj Prataparuda, makes a third ring around Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in that way, we can also think of Srila Prabhupada, that there are different rings of devotees around Srila Prabhupada, and one should try to be in the inner circle, in the inner circle of Prabhupada's followers. One should be very focused on what he wanted. We should all learn what his standards were. It's not that that's only for the Prabhupada disciples. No, that's for everyone to understand very thoroughly what was important to Prabhupada. And that should be important to us. And that will guarantee the strength of this movement for many generations to come. That's the meaning of founder acharya. That's actually what it means. It means that whatever he established is still the source of strength now. And we are still dedicated to fulfilling his mission. So that is much more on our mind than varna ashram. Now, Srila Prabhupada said at the end of his life that only 50% of my work is complete. He said it to several devotees. He said it to Abhiram extensively. He said it to Bhakti Charu Maharaj, like that. He repeatedly said it in his final days. But if you say 50% of the work not completed, it sometimes creates a kind of understanding that therefore varna ashram is equally important to devotional service because it's 50%. But it's not that. It's just in terms of spiritual significance, yes, varna ashram is important, especially for society at large, to give society at large, to bring them closer to spiritual life. The more Varnashram comes into society at large, the more there is a basis in society, and in our own community life as well, that we can bring more elements of the mode of goodness, and that means of prescribed behavior. Varnashram means prescribed behavior at all times, that you don't just do whatever you feel. No, there's always duty. That's Varnashram. It's about duty at all times. Right? At all times. It's Varnashram Dharma. Right? And the essence is, the stress is on Dharma. Varnashram is the detail, but Varnashram Dharma, it's Dharma. But we have already established that we have limits in Dharma, at one point, and that's what we see in our society. I don't think our society would, you know, qualify for the greatest track record of Dharma. I'm sorry to say. I think, and possibly in India, we will find, in South India or anywhere, we find Brahmanas who would score better on the Dharma checklist than we would do. As a society as a whole. But devotional service. Therefore, our saving grace is to engage in devotional service and to simply take up responsibility in devotional service. What can we say? That is the key. The key to advancement is just that responsibility. Because doing incidental service one time is one thing. But no, to take some service, I will do this. That's really, and then rise to the occasion. That was another expression of Srila Prabhupada, rise to the occasion, which means that whatever the circumstances bring in the course of that service, somehow or other, one goes through it. Because moments will come that in the service the mind will just say, now it's too much. This is just too much. This is impossible. But no, rise to the occasion. That is the nature of devotional service. So in this way, our Krishna consciousness is, when we are reading these verses, well, I wanted to put it in context. Because, and that also explains a little bit the last line of the purport. So I'll read both last lines. I'll read the last line of the verse. Similarly, a husband represents the Lord as the object of worship for a woman. And then the last line of the purport. As long as one is very much attached to material sense gratification, the worship of the demigods or the worship of one's husband is recommended. Right? Now, so for us, the worship of Krishna is very much recommended. But in the course of that, some principles of Dharma remain. But service to Krishna is the essence. And if that is in the forefront in our movement, servant of Guru and Gauranga, then certainly our spiritual lives will flourish, our communities will flourish, and we will all go back to Godhead. Okay, any questions or comments?
Mm-hmm. The disciple brought milk. Mm. So my question is how to make sure it is pure devotional service, or how to make sure it is service. Maybe again, just like you mentioned that in argument, the Shastra comes up very clearly and very fast.
Sure.
How we would know that?
In the beginning, when we become involved in devotional service, the compass, you know, our sense of direction, the needle of the compass is moving a bit to left and right, and our focus exactly on what the goal is not so refined yet. It over time it becomes more and more refined. Over time we get more and more knowledge. Over time we get more and more Vaishnav etiquette. Vaishnav etiquette, sada achara, the way a devotee should behave. So over time we learn more how a devotee should behave. Over time we get more knowledge. Over time we understand very well what the 64 aspects of bhakti are, of sadhana bhakti. And we know ado guru padasraya. We know that the first three principles of the 64 aspects of bhakti are relating to the relationship with the spiritual master. First take shelter of the spiritual master, take initiation from the spiritual master, take instruction from the spiritual master. Eventually we'll understand better what it means, all these things. Take initiation, what that means. Right? Each of these are things we could, words that we can click up on, and it's like, you know, they're all like zip files that unzip, and then like another lecture comes out of each word. So we cannot unpack everything here in this particular explanation. But it's a gradual refining of our focus on pure devotional service, stronger and stronger, and it goes, it doesn't stop. That focus increases and increases on pure devotional service. Anya bilasita sunyam. And it becomes finer. You see, things like descriptions in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see how, come on, what is the name of the personality who lived in Panihati from the coconut? Anyway, it comes in a moment, the name, I guess. No, Mayapur. Yeah, Raghava Pandit, thank you. Raghava Pandit. So Raghava Pandit, he had this thing about offering coconuts, and he was expert at coconuts. He knew in which part of Bengal the best coconuts were growing, very big with cream inside and, you know, very sweet and so on. And he had one of those, and then a servant with a knife was clipping the thing, but then they brought it in for offering to the Lord, and they touched the door frame, and then the coconut, and he said, throw it away. The door frame is full of dust, it has touched the coconut, it's not suitable for offering anymore. So, such a high standard. So with time, our standard of what is devotional service is becoming higher and higher. Higher and higher. And in this way, it becomes more and more focused. More and more. And everything else falls away. In the beginning, so many things are well, you know. I mean, you know. But in more and more just disappears. And it's just that service that takes over more and more. And one is trying harder and harder. Like Srimati Radharani said, the fact that I didn't die when Krishna left shows that I have no love at all. Right? So there's a very high standard of that she applies to herself. She measures herself by the highest yardstick. So as we get more and more advanced, we measure ourselves by a higher and higher yardstick. And in this way, the standard increases of what pure devotional service is eternally. What says that one makes spiritual advancement eternally? The love is always increasing, even in the spiritual world. It never ends. It's increasing. Quite something. I saw hands on that side. Yes. Two. Good. You're in the front. The man up front.
You mentioned, Maharaj, that's what we need, the mercy.
Mercy.
And I find myself that I come to progress steadily in devotional service, it's about always appreciating more what I have. So I kind of wonder, is it not a bit outrageous to be asking for mercy when I yet probably don't even appreciate it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, mercy, I didn't necessarily say asking for mercy, but we ask for mercy also. Although we got so much mercy. We got, our whole life is made of mercy, right? Everything, you know, it's all mercy. And we don't appreciate the mercy we got, but still it works, right? Although not fully, in like in the Kalyana Kalpataru, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, but my harsh mind, I've covered this mercy that I received. I've covered this desire tree of mercy that I got from my spiritual master. So it doesn't work on its full potency, but in the association of the devotees, it will be restored. But okay, you know, wherever we can get the mercy, when we realize, you know, we're desperate, we're drowning, drowning in the ocean of material existence, it's not the time to get moral. You know, moralistic, you know what I mean? We're going to get moralistic. Should we get the mercy? Should we ask for the mercy? Should we appreciate the mercy? If we're going under, the waves are going over our head. Anywhere mercy, grab it. Grab it. Huh? That's what I think. Sure.
Maybe it's not 50%, but
no,
it looks like it's more
sure, 50% sure.
In my sense.
Yeah. You know, Varnashram is a topic which creates discussion. Eh? It's just incredible. And that's why I there's no end, actually, you know? I mean, you start, and everyone has an opinion on Varnashram. Everyone. Everyone. There's not one who doesn't have an opinion on it. But the principle is, I at this time try to establish some principles where Rupa Goswami, right, is in the nectar of devotion and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, clearly establishing that Varna Ashram is of secondary importance. And that's all I'm saying. Now, obviously, I've tried to indicate in my class that Varna Ashram is of importance to us, and I'm a sannyasi, which is in Varna Ashram, and I said I like this ashram. I've tried all four. You know, I've tried four ashrams, and I guess I've also tried four varnas. I could say I've tried all eight of these things. And anyway, the sannyas ashram, I like it. It's nice. I can recommend it. But beyond that, even that has its limits. You know, it has its limits. So all that I want to say is Varna Ashram ki jai, but it has its limits. It has its limits. And we should not think we're so nicely, you know, situated in Varna Ashram and everything is really hunky-dory. I'm sorry. It has its limits. Are we done? We are done. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.